This 21 Savage news is beyond me.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily fantasy basketball podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_Beeble. Today we're going to be looking back at Sunday's games, previewing week 17 in the NBA, and also looking ahead to Monday for DFS action. Of course, Michael Bolton.
Let's get to it. To it.
Let's get to it indeed. We will start. Actually, before we start, just a quick reminder. I did discuss the Rodney Hood trade in an earlier podcast. You can check out a separate video on YouTube plus an additional audio show where I talked about that deal where he was moved from the Cavs to the Blazers. So I won't be discussing that in this show. Just check the show before this on your feed. Let's get to where we always do to begin these shows.
Monstrous line of the night.
The monstrous line of the night goes to Mike Conley of the Memphis Grizzlies. 34 minutes, 25 points, 8 rebounds, 7 assists, 3 steals, 2 triples, and a block. And this is a great reminder. Now, when Conley missed the last game with knee soreness, it's a trade coming. He won't play again till the trade deadline. And I thought that was a legitimate chance. But it's just another reminder that so how many times does someone who potentially could get traded sit out a game, and then everyone thinks that teams are always like, oh, no, he's not playing because he's getting traded. He's not playing because he's getting traded. And in general, when that happens, it's when we get told that that's the case. Now, New Orleans is a bit of a different story, but we don't know if any of those guys are going to get traded, Randall or Mirotic or Etuan Moore in that scenario as well. But this is another one of those where Conley was out, oh, yeah, knee soreness, he's definitely getting dealt. And then he was back one game later, played 34 minutes and put up a big line. So, again, the majority of those cases where someone is sitting out and people are screaming, oh, yeah, about to be traded, trading coming, it's just not true. It legitimately just happens once out of every 120 times, and that's probably never even happened 120 times. And in general, it'll get reported they are holding this guy out as they negotiate trade talks. And that's what happened with Mirotic and Tyreke Evans last season, and even Evans didn't even get traded after doing that. So Conley was back putting up those big numbers. I still think there's a significant chance he does get traded at the deadline, and I think his numbers will be fairly solid wherever he ends up going because he is just that good of a player. Another strong performance from him here. If you took a gamble on Conley in drafts in the preseason, it's paying off for you pretty nicely here. He's returning back to the form he had a couple of years ago, the 28th ranked player over the course of the season. He was 23rd two seasons ago last year. That Achilles slash heel issue continued to bother him, and that's why his 12 games didn't even look anywhere near as good as what they had in previous seasons. So a real bounce back guy, and putting up the numbers that look really, really strong at the moment. And let's hope that he can keep that going as the season rolls on.
Waiver wire line of the night.
The waiver wire line of the night is Marcus Smart of the Boston Celtics, still available in 58% of Yahoo leagues. He played 28 minutes in the win over the Thunder, 18 points, 4 rebounds, 7 assists, 2 steals, with 4 triples on 55% shooting. I saw someone say, oh, Smart does well against the Thunder because he went to college in Oklahoma. Well, this game was in Boston, so I've got absolutely no idea how that could possibly translate over. Smart is a player who is, over the course of the season, a top 100 guy, yet is still rostered in under 50% of leagues, while his teammate, which we'll get to shortly, Gordon Hayward, is rostered in 82% of leagues. There is a clear disconnect between people understanding a player's fantasy value. Yeah, Smart's not the greatest shooter, but he's still shooting 41% from the field. It's not a complete write-off on minimal attempts. He's at 79% from the line, 37% from three. He's giving us over 4 assists, almost 2 steals, 1.5 triples, 3 rebounds. Sure, he doesn't fit every single team, but he should not be on as many waiver wires as what he currently is. Go and have a look if what Marcus Smart does helps your team, and that is assists and steals with threes and decent free throw percentage. That's a good contribution in 4 categories. He's a positive contributor in 4 categories, and that's pretty good for a guy that you can just find sitting on the waiver wire. So go and have a look. See if Smart helps you, and don't necessarily be completely put off by all the sub 40% shooting seasons. He's not that this season, and the attempts are well down. He was at almost 20% usage last season, under 14% this season. That's taking better shots and understanding where his strengths lie. It's really helping him put up those really strong fantasy numbers that he's currently doing at the moment. The deep leaguer of the night is CJ Miles of the Toronto Raptors, with Kyle Lowry out. Miles found himself with a larger role. Played 22 minutes, had 15 points with 3 triples, a steal and a block with 4 rebounds, shot the ball really well, also 4 of 6 from the field. Over the last month, he's been a top 200 player on the back of hitting threes. He's also getting steals at a pretty solid rate, but he's not necessarily even an every game guy. In fact, he was a DNP CD in each of the last 2 games, and when the Raptors are healthy, he barely sees the court. But when he plays, the threes will come, like that little stretch where Kawhi was out. He had 3 threes, 2 threes, 4 threes in those 3 games against the Suns, Grizzlies, and Kings. You know, strong games from him. So when he plays, he can be a 3-point streamer. I still don't even think that he's a must roster 20 team league guy, because he's not even an every night player. But when someone does sit out at the 1, 2, or 3 in Toronto, Miles will rejoin the rotation, and he's good for double digits. That's not true. Yeah, more than 1 3 a game, which can be useful in even those very deep formats. Let's go on to the next one.
Young Gun of the Night.
The young gun of the night is Jason Tatum of the Boston Celtics. It wasn't a great night for the young guns. Tatum's line is fairly underwhelming, 11 and 7, but the 2 steals and 2 blocks, yeah, bring it home for him. The percentages were strong as well for Tatum, who's been, would you call him a disappointment? Maybe. Some people had him top 40 this season. That never made much sense. He's around the same area he was last season. 16 and 6, the percentages have dipped somewhat. He was at 48 and 43 last year, down to 45 and 37 this season. So a bit of a dip off there. The usage is at 22%. So that's a spike from last season, but it was always going to find it a little bit hard to repeat some of the heroics. And over the last month, the numbers have actually dipped, and they're getting worse at the moment for Tatum, as his minutes have been reduced a little bit lately as well. And that's, I guess, a level of concern, but not massive. He's just chugging along, doing what he does. I think at some point he does have, you know, top 20 upside. It's probably not going to be on this team. I think he's a little bit overrated based on what he did in his rookie season. He's a much better rotisserie player than he is a head-to-head guy, because he can provide average contributions in multiple categories without standing out in one of them. He need to become like a 25-point scorer with 2 steals a game to really bump his, you know, head-to-head value up. But he can be maybe like a better Rudy Gay type of guy, who was a top 40 roto guy for multiple seasons, just contributing average stats right across the board. Even his current teammate, Gordon Hayward, that's the sort of player that I think Tatum can become, and probably a better guy in terms of fantasy, but still better suited to rotisserie leagues than head-to-head formats. Let's go on to the next one, the dud of the night. I tell a man's not hot. And it is the aforementioned Gordon Hayward of the Boston Celtics, who played 24 minutes and had 3 points, 3 rebounds, 2 assists, and 1 steal, shot 1 of 6 from the field, and he is still rostered in 82% of leagues. He's the 137th ranked player this season. If you are in a 10-team league, there is no need to have Gordon Hayward. If you are in a 12-team league, I think you should be dropping him as well. He's not getting better, and I think this is... Now, back a couple of seasons ago, when Paul George broke his leg, I was worried. And when he came back, I was like, I've seen these leg injuries cost people careers, and they never come back the same. I cited that example of Tyrone Prothro, I think it was, for the Alabama Crimson Tide college football, broke his leg, never played again. I don't think Nathan Brown down here in the Australian Football League broke his leg and was never the same, a similar sort of injury. And I was worried that was going to be the case with Paul George, but he came back and is somehow better than ever. And I think the Paul George recovery led us to be a little bit skewed in thinking about Hayward's recovery and think, oh, well, Paul George recovered, so Hayward's just going to do the same. It's not the case. And I'm really, really worried now about Hayward and his long-term future and how he's going to look as we move forward. He has been not good at all this season. He's not really showing any signs of improving. He's going to be turning 29 soon as well. I'm really worried that we're just never going to get the old Gordon Hayward back. I think that's a legitimate possibility now. And yes, this is his recovery year. He's still trying to work things out. It's a hard fit on this Celtics team. All that's true. But at the start of the season, I didn't really have any concerns that he would get back to somewhere close to himself. Now I have real concerns that he won't get back to that level. And I think you should feel pretty good about, well, not pretty good, because that implies you're going to be happy. I think you should feel satisfied, or at least lessen your doubt in dropping him now. I don't see it. And if he does turn around, good on him. But he's going to be the worst player on your team in almost every scenario. So move on, use that spot to stream, especially with the trade deadline around the corner where value is going to be opened up in many different teams. If you want to stash someone, if you want to make that quick move at the trade deadline, you should be ready to move on from Haywood at a moment's notice. The plus minus goats of the day, Pat Patterson was a plus 124.8 for the Thunder, while Mike Scott, negative 78.5 for the LA Clippers. Very little to talk about with those guys. They are of value in 30-team fantasy leagues, and that is really about it. Let's go into these games now, talk about them in a bit more detail. The three games that we did have on Sunday, all before the Super Bowl, of course. The first one of these games is an interesting one to talk about, the Memphis Grizzlies and the New York Knicks. Gasol was strong as well as Conley, 24-9-5, and with Kyle Anderson out, I worry that this is a long-term injury for Kyle Anderson. Definitely a concern going to see a specialist about this shoulder issue. Bruno Caboclo started, 17 minutes for Bruno. He had a steal. He missed all of his shots. His shooting percentages have been horrific in this stint with Memphis, but he's putting up some okay defensive numbers. But Garrett Temple is slated to return probably next game for Memphis, and that would mean that we'd get Temple and Justin Holiday starting, not Bruno. Holiday was pretty good, 19 points, 5 triples in 37 minutes, and with Anderson now struggling again with injury, it appears that Holiday might be able to hang on to 12-team league value. Triple J, Jaren Jackson Jr., he returned from his injury, 26 minutes, 16 and 7. I saw it floated around as well. I talked about the Conley scenario, that they were sitting Jackson out so they could bump the trade value of other guys. That obviously wasn't the case because Jackson was back after one game and Jermichael Green was terrible, and he remains terrible at this point. Jackson was solid. Green, only 9 minutes. You have to think that his knee is significantly bothering him. You know I've never been the biggest fan of Jermichael Green. I don't think he is a starting caliber NBA power forward. And he is getting worse and worse and worse every game at the moment. I do think that there's a real problem with his knee. And that's why I look at Ivan Rabbit as a bit of a deeper league stash guy. 14 minutes here for Rab, 5 points in this game. And I think if Conley is moved, not Conley, if Gasol is moved, if they move on from Green, I could see Rab even taking Green's spot in the rotation as the season progresses. So he is a name to watch. Jermichael is really pushing back for the deepers. Shelvin Mack played 25 godforsaken minutes, 2-2-4 with 2 steals and a block. So nice assist, nice steal numbers for Mack. If they trade away Conley, God, I hope that they're not just going to give the reins to Shelvin Mack. If they do, then yeah, he's a 12-team league guy, but he's not the ideal option they should be looking at. On to the Knicks, a little bit more clarification about what's going on here, because we did have the traded players make their debut. DeAndre Jordan played 29 minutes as the starting center, 12-12 with a steal and a block. Of course, he's in there to provide veteran leadership and to provide no defense out of a center. Not like they had one of those guys on their team already. I wonder what the difference is between Cantor and Jordan. DeAndre had 12-12. I think the minutes, only 29 there, I think the minutes will continue. They will not continue. They will drop at some point this season. I don't think there's necessarily going to be a buyout coming from DeAndre, and that's going to have impacts on Mitchell Robinson and Luke Kornet. Now, Kornet was the backup center here, played 20 minutes, 11 points with 3 blocks and 3 triples because Robinson was ill. So we still don't have a full understanding if they're going to run 3-man center rotations, if Robinson's going to play over Kornet, which is 100% what they should be doing. If you've got Jordan, you just hold on to him until they make a decision to limit what he does. And of course, this is the end for Enes Kanter. Although we've already had the end for Enes Kanter, it feels like twice already, and then he comes back into the rotation. Dennis Smith Jr. made his first start for the Knicks, 26 minutes, 8-3-6, a steal and a block. Not fantastic, but still has to be rostered in 12-team leagues. While Wes Matthews came off the bench, but played 28 minutes because, and again, people criticize me for my discussions on Fizdale all the time, oh, he's developing the younger guys. Well, that's why Wes Matthews came in his first game and played 28 minutes, and Dotson played 19 minutes, Trier played 15 minutes, because you've got to develop Wes Matthews, of course. Again, it's not something that I think is going to last every game because Fizdale changes his mind every 5 seconds. But it's not a great sign that he came in and Trier played only those 15 minutes and Dotson played just the 20 minutes despite starting. And the two big minute players on the wing were Mario Hezonja and Wes Matthews, players which I'm sure everyone understands are no part of the Knicks' future, which again makes so many of the Kanter decisions so bewildering, or maybe not bewildering if you look a little bit deeper. Hezonja was strong, 14-8 with 2 triples in 22 minutes for him. Again, absolutely no idea how the rotation's going to run because it is going to change from game to game. Kadeem Allen was solid as the backup behind Smith. He had 5 assists, but not a lot else, and he's not a high-priority guy. So trying to break this all down, would you have Trier in a 12-team league? I think he's okay to hold on to, But yeah, expecting consistency, expecting big minutes, expecting consistent play out of Trier is probably going to be a fool's errand, and he's going to be more likely suited to a 16-team league, 14-team league guy, rather than being a must-roster 12-team league player, which again, some people thought may have been the case. And yeah, it hasn't turned out that way just at this point. It's going to be a lot of up and downs for Alonso, better than Doncic, Trier. The next game we look at was the Thunder and the Celtics. The Celtics win 134-129. Paul George had 37 points and Russell Westbrook another triple-double, 22, 12, and 16 with two steals. Steve Adams, 16 and 9. And Dennis Schroeder, an inefficient 16 points. He had six rebounds with two triples and two steals. 39% shooting. He's nice for points. He's a back-end 12-team league guy, probably better suited to 14-team leagues, and he can help you in those points categories, but he's far from a must-roster guy. Well, Jeremy Grant was solid enough, and Terry Ferguson, 34 minutes for Ferg. He hit three triples, so he's back into that moderately sized league three-point streaming type option. For the Celtics, Kyrie had 34 and 11, while Al Horford continued his strong form, 14, 2, and 9. Nine assists, that's great for Horf. Two steals and a block, while Daniel Vanilla Tice, he got the bump with Aaron Baines out, 14 points in 17 minutes. So deeper leagues might want to take a look at Tice, as Baines could miss a week or so of action here. Marcus Morris, 33 minutes, that's a lot. 19 points on 57% shooting. We know about his shooting percentages. They have started to come back down, but this was a strong performance. Well, Jaylen Brown and Terry Rozier, they both struggled a little bit in this one. 10 points for Rozier, 12 points for Brown, and they are more 14 to 16 team league guys than 12 team players. The last game was the Raptors blowing out the Clippers, 121-103. Montrezl Harrell, the table, he made the start, while Marcin Gortat was out of the rotation entirely. 30 minutes for Harrell, 10 points with 4 blocks, while Boban Marjanovic played 17 minutes again and almost got his second consecutive double-double. 10-9 with 2 steals. Now, we've seen this Boban story play out. How many goddamn times has he come in, he plays 12 minutes, and you go, oh, he only needs 16 minutes to be a 12-team league guy, and then he goes and plays 5 minutes, and he's out of the rotation for 2 weeks, and he comes in and plays 25 minutes, and we all get hard, and then we grab him, and then he comes back out of the rotation. So, caution is obviously needed with Marjanovic, but yeah, Gortat's been dreadful pretty much all season. Doc cannot settle on a center rotation, so Boban for now. 14, 16, probably 16 team leagues. You can grab him and see what happens, but I wouldn't be holding my breath. Only 18 points for Lou Williams, and more importantly, only 21 minutes in this blowout, while Patrick Beverley had 12 points in 30 minutes. Got to highlight Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, who was great, 19, 5, and 3, a steal and 2 blocks. I do worry when Danilo Gallinari comes back what's going to happen to Shai's minutes. I'm really here for Shai long term. I think he's a top 100 lock in the future, top probably 70 lock in the future. But for the rest of this season, I'm not buying in. Well, Tobias Harris, he's clearly dealing with that shoulder issue. 13 points for Toby in 31 minutes. Didn't shoot the ball well. And I wouldn't be surprised if a game or two off is coming his way, unfortunately. For the Raptors, Free Van Vliet, he started with Lowry out. 9, 5, and 7. He had the 3 steals. We know that when he gets an opportunity to start, he can put up some pretty interesting numbers, but that doesn't happen often enough. And when everyone's healthy, he just isn't that guy who's going to get enough playing time to be useful. Barker had 16 and 12, but this was just a blowout from very early on. So minutes were limited right over the place. Pascal Siakam, just the 22 minutes. Kawhi, just 26 minutes. Danny Green, just 20 minutes. We had 12 minutes from Patrick McCaw and 4 minutes from Jordan Lloyd. So that should give you enough to understand how much of a blowout this game was. And very little actionable fantasy stuff, especially on the Toronto side of the equation. All right, guys, let's take a look at week 17 for fantasy basketball help for daily leagues, weekly leagues, and just try and get the best idea of how the schedule breaks out over this week. Another fairly spread out schedule for the week. Games played Monday, we've got 6, Tuesday, we've got 8, Wednesday, 7, Thursday, 6, Friday, 8, Saturday, 9, and Sunday 5, what am I talking about? Realistically, you could probably stream every one of those days. The ones you might have some trouble with are Saturday in particular, maybe Tuesday, maybe Friday. I like to go 8 and under as pretty clear stream days. Anything above that might be a bit tricky, but the highest game played for the day for the week is Saturday with only 9. So streaming is very, very important for this upcoming week, and you're maximizing the value you can get out of your waiver wire acquisitions is going to be key to getting a victory this week. Of course, things could be really turned upside down when the trade deadline hits later in the week as well. The team who has the best schedule for this week is the Washington Wizards. They play four games. They don't have all four of those on quality days, but in terms of opponents, they're all quality. The Atlanta Hawks, the Milwaukee Bucks, the Cleveland Cavaliers, and the Chicago Bulls. So teams like the Bulls, the Cavs, and the Hawks in particular do allow a shit ton more fantasy points to be scored against them. And the Bucks, while they're a very, very good team, you can put up some decent numbers against them at times. So the Wizards have the strongest schedule, you know, meaning a lot of these guys that you might not consider, maybe someone like Jeff Green.
My name is Jeff.
Even Tom Bryant, who's been pretty limited lately, he gets some very tasty matchups against Atlanta and Chicago in particular, where he could really go off. It boosts the value of guys like Satoransky and Ariza, who should be rostered regardless, but it's interesting here for the Wizards to get this bump. While on the flip side, the Jazz are the only team this week that play two games, meaning it's really hard to roster a lot of these guys. The only two players you consider would be Rudy Gobert and Don Mitchell. In 10-team leagues, you probably wouldn't have either of those guys active. In 12s, you know, Gobert probably fits the bill. You could look at someone like Mitchell maybe in a 12-team weekly lineup. Just depends on how the rest of your squad looks and everyone else, like Rubio and Ingles, Favors, Crowder. Of course, they just lose a ton of value given the Jazz only play two games. And one of those games is against the Suns, but two games is a pretty tough road bump or speed bump to try and get past, unfortunately. Let's look at how the rest of the week shakes out. Nine teams play four games over the week 17, and just the one team with the two games, that's the Jazz. So everybody else, all other 20 teams, play three games this week. We're looking at targeting, yeah, pretty much every day this week except Saturday, but even then, there's still a chance you can get action out of that. While we got the Sacramento Kings and the Phoenix Suns, all four of their games for this upcoming week land on quality game days, meaning you can stream those guys in and actually get to use them if you add them during the week. So adding someone like Marvin Bagley, maybe Iman Shumpert you could consider, McCall Bridges, who's a really hot ad at the moment, Josh Jackson, Rishon Holmes, Ali Okobo, Kelly Oubre, if he hasn't been picked up already. There is a ton to get of value, especially in Phoenix, for this coming week, and being able to utilize those guys four times during the week. Whereas if you add someone from Memphis who might have an increased opportunity, Bruno Caboclo with Kyle Anderson is injury, they play three games and only two of them run quality games. So you might be able to use two games of that guy versus four games of someone like an Iman Shumpert in Sacramento. And while maybe using Caboclo is not the greatest of examples there in Memphis, we could use the Bulls. You know, say Bobby Portis is on your waiver wire, you might want to add him, and that's still a good idea, but you might get two games worth of Bobby Portis for this week versus four games of McCall Bridges, and I know which side of that equation I would rather be on for this coming week. Actually, for the rest of the season, but I'm talking about this week. Some guys to watch for this week who, you know, might be on your waiver wire, who you could add in and feel pretty comfortable about starting in weekly lineups. Bridges, who I've already spoken about, really strong Phoenix schedule, plus he's playing well at the moment. Terry Ross of the Orlando Magic probably is available in a lot of your leagues. He's got a strong enough schedule this week. Kevin Huerter of the Atlanta Hawks, I do really like adding him long term, but especially for this week too. A couple of other Magic players, John Isaac and DJ Augustin. I think Isaac's probably a must add 12-team league guy. Augustin's a fringe guy, but with how the roster or the week is shaking out, they've got the second best schedule, the Magic, for this week. They play four games. They have a back-to-back to end the week as well. You're getting Augustin in, you can get some value out of him. Tyreek in Indiana has really struggled, but this is an opportunity to maybe get some value out of him. The third best schedule the Pacers have for this week. They start the week off with a back-to-back as well, so Tyreek could have some value. Jeff Green in Washington, as I've already mentioned. Josh Jackson in Phoenix, and Dwight Powell and Maxi Kleber in Dallas have some value for this upcoming week, as well as long-term as well, but they could be options that you could use and actually lock into a weekly lineup as we move forward. Now, the other thing we like to look at in this portion of the show is trying to work out how best that we can approach waiver wire restrictions, waiver wire acquisition limits, and by looking at where the back-to-backs lie. So to begin the week, we're looking at who plays on the Monday, Tuesday. There are two teams there, the Detroit Pistons and the Indiana Pacers. So a Corey Joseph, Tyreek Evans type scenario in Indiana, filling in for Victor Oladipo. You might get those two games for the price of one there. Detroit's a little bit harder to find the right value. Reggie Jackson's probably a guy who's a must-add guy, but he looks a really strong ad for at least these two games. Maybe you could look at the Duck Luke Kennard, although his minutes are pretty much all over the place. You could look at Langston Galloway.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
I probably wouldn't, just for your own sanity. Tuesday, Wednesday, the next day we want to target, but unfortunately, there's no Tuesday, Wednesday back-to-back, so we flip to Wednesday, Thursday, and there's only one back-to-back there, and that is the Spurs. It's not a great matchup for the Spurs against the Warriors and the Blazers, but adding one of those guys, maybe it's Bryn Forbes, Marco Bellinelli, Pat Mills, Davis Bertans. You get two games in that Wednesday, Thursday back-to-back for those guys, and you might get a combined 7 threes out of one of those players, and that can really help tilt that category in your direction. There's not a lot else there in San Antonio who's on the wire. Derek White, of course, is a must-roster player, so if he's there, he's a clear ad, but they're the only team with that Wednesday, Thursday back-to-back. Thursday, Friday, it's pretty slim pickings as well. In fact, the Minnesota Timberwolves are the only team with that back-to-back on Thursday and Friday. There's a lot of options there depending on how the Derrick Rose, Jeff Teague scenarios work out. Jared Bayless is putting up good numbers. In deeper leagues, Luol Deng's in the rotation for some reason. You could stream in Dario Saric or Taj Gibson across that back-to-back as well to give you some value. Friday, Saturday, there are a few teams with back-to-backs. Now, that's all going to depend on how your team looks and how your roster looks. Because, yeah, with 9 games on Saturday, you might not be able to use that player, but you might. So let's talk about them. The Wizards have a back-to-back there. The Pelicans have a back-to-back. The Bucks have a back-to-back on that slate as well. And the Cavs and the Knicks. So we're seeing there's not many teams who have got multiple back-to-backs this week. So there is some value in finding the right spot to attack them, and you know, plenty of teams there that do have that back-to-back Friday, Saturday, and then Saturday, Sunday. Again, it may work, it may not. We're looking at the Magic who have got that. So those guys I mentioned, August and Isaac, Terry Ross, there's value in those guys. And the Atlanta Hawks you're looking at. Yeah, Jeremy Lin might be an option there. The Wizard Omari Spellman. Maybe you look at Alex Len. Maybe it's Kevin Huerter. Of course, this is post-All-Star break, so a few different things could be looking, things could be looking a little bit different for a few of the teams that I have mentioned there. And that's it. That's all of the action from Sunday, a really short day for the Super Bowl. Let's move on now, talk some DFS action, of course, start to look at the perfect lineups, and we go to DraftKings first. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Marcus Smart, CJ Miles, Al Horford, Marcus Gasol, Westbrook, Justin Holiday, and Mike Conley for a total of $337.25, and that cost $49,900. And then on FanDuel, Westbrook, Conley, Schroeder, Smart, Paul George, Miles, Tatum, Pat Patterson, and Boban for a total of $329.8, and that costs the full $60,000. Let's move in now to look at the DFS games for Monday. There is only the 6 of them. Let's look at some FanDuel pricing today. The first game we look at, the Nuggets are 4-point favorites, and the total is 209. The Nuggets backcourt is still up in the air. Gaz Harris.
Nice, Gary!
He has already been ruled out. Jamal Murray is questionable. Of course, if Murray is out, that means we get a lot more Monty Morris. Malik Beasley's been the guy who's been picking up the Gary Harris slack. For Detroit, we're all good in terms of our injury statuses at this point. Murray's down to 7,000 on FanDuel. That would make him maybe a tournament guy, but I'm not super interested there. I don't think he plays, to be honest. Well, Reggie Jackson, the salary has gone through the roof. 6,800 now because, hold on to your pants, he is averaging 42 points over the last 3. That is so far from what Reggie Jackson normally does. So an element of skepticism should be put in there. And with that price elevation, he probably looks like a fade to me. Ish Smith back from the groin injury, but not really doing it. I like Malik Beasley a lot. How could you not at 4,900? He's giving us 30 a night on elite shooting numbers. Reggie Bullock at 47 doesn't do it for me. Kennard the same. And Monty Morris, he's up to 5,800 because he is giving us 43 a night. Now, if Murray is out, Morris becomes a strong play. But if Jamal plays, it's really tough to get onto Monty at that sort of an elevated salary. Langston Galloway, no. The Shark, Bruce Brown.
Baby Shark,
probably not as well. And then we go to small forward. Now, Farton Will Barton, that salary's dropped by $1,000. He's down to 5,400. That absolutely opens up the appeal of Barton. He hasn't been good the last couple of games, but at that salary, pretty tough to ignore him in tournaments. Stan Johnson, you can just ignore to your heart's content. At power forward, Paul Millsap, who's been not great, averaging 17 points over his last 5. A pretty strong record for him against Detroit, but I'd only be looking at him for tournaments, and even then, not confidently. While Blake Griffin's at 9,400, Blake is giving us 40 a night relatively consistently. I like Griffin quite a bit here. And then the centers is where it really is. Andre Drummond's at 9,300. I like the matchup for Drummond. We've seen lots of centers put up good numbers against Nikola Jokic. So 9,300 strong. As for Jokic, 11,300. That's big for him, but he's averaging 56 over the last five. No reason he can't be a 50-plus guy again as he continues to put up those strong, strong numbers. Over on DraftKings, I like Reggie Jackson. That 5,200, super appealing. 82 for Drummo looks good as well. The 65 for Jamal Murray, if he plays, is in play. 88 for Blake Griffin is strong as well. And Malik Beasley at 55 is nowhere near as appealing as what he is over on FanDuel. The next game, we take a look at the Wizards. They are hosting the Atlanta Hawks. The Wizards are six-point favorites, a total 233, the largest spread on the entire slate. Troy Brown is doubtful with an ankle sprain, while Tyler Dorsey is probable with an illness. At point guard, you got Jeremy Lin is down at 3,700. I'm not really interested in him. Thomas Satoransky, I know that Satoransky's been playing well, but 6,500 I feel like takes a lot of the value away from him, so there are better ways to get a point guard into your lineup, and one of those might be Trae Young, who's averaging 42 over the last five. He's at 7,600, just really playing very, very well at the moment, getting a lot of minutes and a lot of shots. At shooting guard, I like Beal a lot. 9,300 here for Brattles. This should be a 40-plus night for him, potentially 50. 55 type upside for Bielo. I like him. Well, Kevin Huerter at 5,000. Huerter's giving us 28 a night, remaining in the starting lineup despite the return of Prince and Bazemore. 5,000 probably renders him more as a tournament guy just because I'm not certain of his floor, while Bazemore's at 4,200 and I'm not interested in him. Otto Porter's at 66. He was back in the groove last game, dropped over 40 points. I like him, although that salary has risen a little bit too much. While the artist, formerly known as Taurean Prince, has been struggling, no doubt. I like the 4,900 salary for him, but there's an element of risk in using that. Ariza's at 6,100, probably $300 or $400 too high for me to consider him. Bembry is out of consideration now as well. The Baptist, John Collins at 7,600, that's a really strong price. He's coming off a 58-point performance. He is constantly scoring and rebounding. All he needs to do is just add that block or steal in, and he smashes through that value. So I like him there. Jeff Green.
My name is Jeff.
He's at 5,400. He's giving us 30 a night. No reason to consider him a terrible cash option. And then at center, Tom Bryant. Now, the matchup's really strong for Bryant, but the way that Brooks has been using him has been troublesome. He's more of a GPP guy, while the Undertaker, Dwayne Dedman's at 5,700. He has been a 29-30-point type of a guy, and at 5,700, it's really hard to expect much more out of a guy like that. So he remains a pretty okay cash guy, I think. On DraftKings, there's a lot I like here. Porter, Prince, Satoransky at 56 is strong. Huerter at 44 I really like. Beal at 91 looks pretty good as well. And if you're taking a flyer on someone, the 3,100 on Jordy McRae could actually pay off for you on DraftKings. Next up, the Bucks and the Nets. The Bucks are 7-point favorites. The total, 227.5. We need the Nets to keep this one close because we know that the Bucks have been smacking everyone, and then Budenholzer just reduces the minutes for the starters, which is all obviously annoying. Now, Eric Bledsoe missed last game. He's been upgraded to probable here, while Smoke and Joe Harris is questionable for the Nets. The blue swimmer, Alan Crabb, is out, as is Spencer Dinwiddie and Caris LeVert. At point guard, Bledsoe's at 7,300. He'd been putting that number together pretty consistently, so I don't mind him here in a positive matchup. While Shabazz Napier, the salary's at 5,800. That might be a little bit too high for Shabazz. Last game, he did struggle, but I think that might make people go off him a bit, and it might make him interesting in a tournament setting. D'Angelo Russell's at 8,500. I just love what he's doing almost every night. He can be inconsistent at times, but I do like D'Angelo here. While Chrissy Middleton's at 68, I think that's just too high for Middleton. There are better guys out there. And one of those better guys is Malcolm Brogdon at 6,000, who feels like a rock-solid floor cash guy. Sterling Brown, Trevion Graham, Tone Snell, no. Smoke and Joe Harris is at 5,000. Damari Carroll's at 48. I think they're both strong fades. While Antetokounmpo at 11,600, I'm here for that completely. The only issue there is if the Bucks blow them out, do they limit Antetokounmpo's minutes? For the power forwards, Rowdy Rodion's Kurux is at 38. He's really just a tournament guy. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson at 43. Now, think if Joe Harris is out, that pushes Kurux down more to the 2 and 3, and that does open up some minutes for Hollis-Jefferson to play at the 4, but his return this season has been so underwhelming that I'm not really interested at all. Eddie Davis coming off a big 35-point game on the back of some big rebounding numbers. Now, I think he might struggle in a matchup against Brook Lopez, but at 5,200, there is marginal GPP upside, but he's not a strong option. I like Jared Allen. I think he can get out and guard Brook Lopez. He's at 57. He's worth a GPP look for sure, while Lopez is crushing at the moment. moment. He's at 6,400, so it's an elevated price for Lopez, and that's probably the only thing that turns me off. But centers against the Nets have been killing it in recent times. Lopez averaging 39 against his former team the last three times. No reason to consider Lopez a bad play here. On DraftKings, I like Allen, Russell, Lopez, Antetokounmpo. I think Damari at 45 has a little bit of appeal as a GPP guy against his former coach, but nothing too interesting there. The next game, the Pacers and the Pelicans. The Pacers are one-point favorites. The total, 218. All of the Pelicans are out again. Davis, Mirotic, Randall, Moore, Payton, all those guys are sidelined, whereas For the Pacers, Corey Joseph is questionable. That's going to open up more minutes for Edmund Sumner, for Aaron Holiday, and for Tyreek Evans. Now, Frank Jackson's been starting for the Pelicans. He had 30 points last game, and at sub 4,000, I'm in on Frank Jackson here. Joseph at 45 had a nice 27-point game. If he plays, there could be some value there as a decent enough cash guy, while Darren Collison's at 6,500. And while Collison's playing well, I think that salary might be just a little bit too high. Timmy Frazier, another guy we can look at on the Pelicans at 4,400, who's averaging 29 over the last three with Alfred Payton sidelined. For the shooting guards, Drew's at 9,100, struggled last game, but I feel okay about using him, especially with the salary dropping $500. And then you've got Aaron Holiday at 35, who's just a GPP guy. Tyreek's at 49. He's done pretty much nothing all season, but the opportunity continues just to be marginally interesting. But even then, it is tough to get fully invested in Tyreek, but there is some GPP value. Bojan's at 57, Bojan Bogdanovic, I like that for cash quite a bit. And Darius Miller's got an opportunity, but 4,800, I think he's probably a little bit too high. Kenrick Williams at 49, love what this bloke's doing, love that for cash, like it for tournaments as well. While Domantas Sabonis cannot get anything going most of the time here. 6,200 in a positive matchup makes him a GPP guy. Cheick Diallo at 38 had a strong game last time out. He's very easily got 30-point upside. He's also got like 8-point floor, so making him a tournament guy. While Thad Young is on a real roll at the moment, giving us 30 a night. I'm not super interested in his upside. I think he's a cash guy, but even then, I'm not super into it. Okafor's at 7,500. Is his upside actually high enough to consider him a tournament guy in a real negative matchup? I'm going to say no, and I think this might be a bit of a letdown for Jahlil. While 7,100 for Miles Turner, this is a massive positive for Turner, so I'm in on him. I would take him over Okafor, save myself the $400 as well. On DraftKings, Frankie Jackson, Kendrick Williams, Drew Holiday, they all look pretty solid. I think Sabonis at 55 looks strong. Diallo at 32 is an excellent GPP flyer, and Tyreek the same at 4,600. Let us go on to the next game. We've got the Rockets and the Suns. The Rockets are 8-point favorites. The total, 229.5. Chris Paul sat out last game. He should be returning to action here. Paul is at 7,300, and the matchup is super positive, but I just worry that they will limit the minutes here, so I'm not massively into him. While Ali Okobo finally got big minutes last game and returned value, but trusting that and trusting Kokoschkov with his playing time is tough at 4,400. For the shooting guards, there's a bit of value here. Eric Gordon is a GPP guy. Jimmy Harden, now 13,800 with Chris Paul back. It might be pushing it a bit, but how can I say that? The guy's coming off 90 points in the last game and he's averaging 66 over the last five. But weirdly enough, 66, it doesn't quite get you where you need to be. And at that salary, you need to find a lot of cheap guys to put in, and that might be tough. Now, there are players like Frank Jackson around, Timmy Frazier, guys that you can put in that sub $4,500 price point, which you might need to do, but he's not a 100% lock here, Harden, at that sort of a salary. Rivers, Daniels, Crawford, they're not doing it, but Devin Booker at 9,000, he is. He's playing a lot of minutes, he's putting up good numbers. I like Devin Booker at that salary. Oubre's at 66 and McCall Bridges is at 57. For some reason, someone's flicked the switch for Bridges and he's way more aggressive offensively, and it's resulting in 30 plus nights a lot. The matchup is a decent one for Bridges. I'm a little bit hesitant on saying he's a must roster guy, and that $500 salary bump does sour it a little bit, but Bridges has been really, really strong. Oubre at 66 hasn't quite been living up to that number. Joshie Jackson's at 63. He's been closer to that. I think I'd prefer to take Josh Jackson at 63 versus Oubre at 66. And now Ken Fareed, the numbers keep rising for him. $8,000 is too high for it. Now, it's a massive matchup, really positive, but $8,000 is too much for Kenneth Fareed, in my opinion. And then at center, Ayton is at 7,400. Strong first game back, 34 points. I think he's okay to use in cash, and he's a decent enough tournament upside guy, and it's fingers crossed that Kokoschkov plays him 33-34 minutes. On DraftKings, I like Okobo, Bridges, Farida at a much more reasonable $7,000 on DraftKings. Jimmy Harden at 12.9, Booker at 9,000 also have some pretty good value over there. The last game of the day, we've got the Spurs, we've got the Kings. The Spurs are 1.5 point favorites, the tightest spread of the day apart from that Pacers-Pelicans game. 227 as a total, so a nice high total. That should make things interesting here. Derek White ruled out for the Spurs, unfortunately, so that ups the value of a few of these Spurs guys. Patty Mills at 4,100, I really like that. Bryn Forbes at 43, he'll likely shift over to point guard. That does give him some value, though he's not a high assist generator anyway. And then you've got De'Aaron Fox at point guard also, 7,600. You know, Fox and Mills, I think, are in pretty good spots in this one. At shooting guard, DeRozan should be able to generate a few more assists because he's really struggling in other areas. 7,800 for DeMar. I think this is a time to get back on him. I think Ballinelli plays some more, and he is a strong 30-point upside GPP guy. Or Bogdanovic. The minutes have been a bit confusing, and that salary is too high. I think he's a fade, and Shumpert's not really interesting me. At small forward, I do like Rudy Gay. 6,200. He should be a strong floor cash play here. Davis Bertans is really always a GPP guy. Bielitsa, Justin Jackson, they're not going to do it. At power forward, Bagley's at 62. He's a 30-point a night guy at the moment. No worries in getting him into a lineup, especially for cash. Well, Aldridge up at 9,500 might be just a little bit too high for my tastes. At center, Cauley Stein's at 6,100. Weirdly, he does well against the Spurs, who historically have been tough to play against for opposition centers. I'm not fully ready to trust Cauley Stein here, but he is in play. While Gasol and Jakob Poeltl on the Spurs side, they're not really going to get me all that interested. On DraftKings, Ballinelli, DeRozan, Bogdanovic, Fox, and Bagley are all pretty interesting, as is Mills and Forbes with the news that White is now out. Let's go through some studs and value plays. On DraftKings, I like Drummond as a stud, and my value play is Frank Jackson. On FanDuel, my stud is Beal, and my value play is Frankie Jackson. And then on Yahoo, my stud is Drummond, and my value play is Frank Jackson for minimum salary. That'll do it for me. Hopefully your team won the Super Bowl, or hopefully the team that you hate, the Patriots, ended up losing if that's the way that you want to roll. Follow me on Twitter at @RedRock_Beeble. Check out the rest of the Locked On Podcast Network, and the easiest way to find your favorite podcast is by telling your smart speaker to play the podcast Locked On and then insert the team name there. Leave a comment, leave a review on YouTube, go subscribe, hit the bell. You know all the ways that you can keep up to date with this show. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. John Henson.